Hands?
Have courage, my friend.
Yeah. Hans, I've just noticed something.
These communists are all cowards.
Have you looked at our caps recently?
Our caps?
The badges on our caps. Have you looked at them?
What? No. A bit?
They've got skulls on them. Have you noticed that our caps have actually got little pictures of skulls on them?
I don't,
Hans... Are we the baddies?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 24 of the week of March 17th, 2014. I am David After Dentist David T. Cole, and I'm here with Coma Baby Sarah D. Bunting.
Beep.
Marshmallow Tara Ariano.
So squishy.
Taser enthusiast Nick Reinwell Jones.
Hey, have you met Mr. Sparky?
And Private Dick John Ramos.
Who's your daddy?
Programming note right off the top. As if we didn't all have enough reasons to hate Time Warner Cable, and we do. The latest is that an outage in Sarah D. Bunting's area in Brooklyn, sorry, use the phrase Sarah D. Bunting's area. I mean her geographical area, as in her neighborhood.
Say,
what? It's having an outage, which means she is not able to join us at this time as we begin the podcast, which is sad, but we will try to soldier on without her. Fortunately, we have a very strong rundown, so I think that we will be able to fill in all the gaps other than perhaps outrage at a future segment, which we will hear about when we get there.
And Sarah D. Bunting, as you listen to this, this is for you.
Okay. So our lead topic today, and the reason that we had planned two guests, not just two guests, but these two particular guests, is the Veronica Mars movie, Veronica Mars. So here with me is John Ramos, former recapper of Veronica Mars for its whole run on Television Without Pity, and Nick Reinwell Jones, fan and Kickstarter backer.
Thank you very
Welcome,
much.
Gentlemen.
Thank you.
Did you back the Kickstarter too?
I did not, actually.
Okay, I didn't either.
I didn't
it's
get
okay.
around to it.
I wasn't, yeah. I wasn't saying that to shame you. I support you not supporting the Kickstarter, because we didn't either. So you went to see it in the theater, Nick.
I did. I got to go to the early Kickstarter screening on Thursday night.
Tell us a little bit
AMC.
About it.
Well, it was a lot of hardcore Veronica Mars fans, as you'd expect.
I would think.
A lot of people with Team Logan t-shirts. I will say I did not see anyone wearing a Team Piz shirt.
All right.
I did see some people wearing homemade Team
Deputy Leo.
Yeah, Team Deputy Leo shirts,
sure.
Which I was very much behind. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit disturbing just to see like the hordes, because I was like, how big of a crossover is there here with like Twilight people? It just seemed like there's got to be, just like I tweeted this, just like I worry that like when people are like way too into action movies that they're also like NRA members, it's like you don't really want to know where their other interests lie besides this.
Sure.
But it was also a little bit of a clusterfuck the way they were letting people in, because you had to get like a lanyard and a t-shirt, and those weren't just special gifts, like you needed one to get inside, and then instead of like waiting to start the movie until everyone had all their stuff, they just started it right on time, so people are still streaming in while the
like TV it just starts. They don't
exactly
come. That's how
that is how committed they were to playing the TV bit. Yeah,
I have a feeling that a lot of those people will be seeing it again, though.
I imagine so.
If they missed the beginning,
yeah,
because you have to think everybody who got the advance tickets also gets the Flixster download, right?
Right, which
apparently
its own,
doesn't work from what I hear.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is also, like, they didn't tell you what it was going to be in advance. I kind of assumed it would be an iTunes download, and it wasn't, so that's a little disappointing. But apparently, if you email the Warner Brothers people, they will swap you out for an iTunes.
Yeah, I think they tried to make it right. If you rent it and then send them a receipt, I think they reimburse you. So.
Well, at least the Warner company got one thing right this weekend.
Well, that's the non-spun-off part.
I know. Yeah.
The non-redheaded stepchild Warner Brothers.
We're all shaking our fists at Time Warner Cable.
Shake harder, son!
All right, so let's talk about the movie. What did we think?
I loved it.
You loved it, too.
Yeah, I loved it, too, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll get into whether, like, does it work as a standalone movie versus just an extension of the show. Mm-hmm. I think it's really not trying to be any more than, like, expanded episode on the big screen, which I think is fine. Like, I don't see any reason to try to make it, like, have mass appeal all of a sudden. I mean, the point is they were reviving it however they could, which in this case was in the form of a movie.
Mm-hmm. I did at points, though, try to watch it as if I had not seen the series. You know, I mean, not that you can do that completely, but right. I tried to put myself in the shoes of someone who hadn't seen it, and I still found a lot of the moments really electric. You know, even if you had never seen Logan and Veronica before, I thought their stuff really popped.
Yeah, I think the setup works fine.
Okay. I'm against Logan.
Oh, I know on principle you're against Logan, and I never was a big Veronica Logan fan. I just meant as far as screen chemistry goes, I thought they worked. Yeah, I don't know.
I never really Sarah liked never him on the got show over bum fights. No, but. Well, yeah, right. But yeah, bum fights is a problem, and also, well, anyway, he's just not as cute as Piz. I'm sorry to be shallow. Piz is cuter. Is anyone going to sit here and disagree that that is true?
I wouldn't disagree with you, Noah, but I love Chris Lowell. You know, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a big Enlisted fan, sure. So it's just, you know, I don't know. It almost doesn't seem worth.
That's where I would recognize it from. All right,
could have just asked me while we were watching it. You also recognize him from your favorite movie, The Help, Dave.
Yeah, you didn't watch Private Practice, Dave? Like,
no.
Okay. Even I know that he was on Private Practice because I never watched it. But you have to admit Jason Doering's commitment to the Veronica Mars series, that he did almost nothing else in the interim, whereas
That's
Chris Lowell
true.
Did a lot of other roles. So, yes, he did. You know.
I mean, I know that if they hadn't gotten Veronica and Logan together, like, people would have burned the theater down. Like, I get it.
Well, look, I mean, again, like, not coming from a place where I was a huge, you know, Logan-Veronica shipper or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I did like the way that Logan... I found him to be much more of just kind of a straight man, rather than that super starky, you know, mad at the world, everything. He was just like, he was someone you could see was actually 10 years older, and I could root for Veronica to be with him, this Logan, more than the kid Logan, in my opinion.
Yeah. They did a very believable job of showing how, like, everyone was not just... like, behaving as their high school personas, like, they had believably changed.
Except Dick.
Right, except Dick, but, of course.
But would anyone point. Want, that's want Dick to
we
change?
We do not
want to
see the
I'll just interject
Dick.
With the perspective of the non-Veronica Mars watcher when it's worth it. And I will say my takeaway was that I probably would have really liked to see the Dick movie.
Yeah.
Maybe they can make a side sequel.
I mean, every line of his landed.
Yeah.
Like a motherfucker. Like, he really... granted, he's like a tertiary character in the movie at best.
Yeah.
But still, he really got a lot of love from the screenwriters, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've admitted that that's why they've kept him around, basically. Yes. They like writing for him.
Had to add that thing at the end where... I mean, I don't know if we need to spoiler this. We're talking about the movie.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
And, yeah. All right, spoilers for the movie here on out. You've been warned.
Pirates ahoy. Yeah. Where they have to say at the end that he was involved in what the actual reason for all the murders
right,
was.
On the boat.
He was on
right.
the boat, but then they have to make sure they say, well, he didn't know anything
right,
that happened.
Right.
He wasn't part of it. You're still. It's still okay to like Dick.
Yeah.
It's believable that he was part of it.
And, you know, this is a character whose little brother is still probably a grease spot on the... you know, a sidewalk outside whatever hotel
right.
that was. And he never was super damaged about that.
No. No, it's true. Well, but no, then just that he wasn't complicit. He wasn't guilty is
right.
my point.
Yeah, of
which
course.
Was believable that he was passed out. When
absolutely.
That was, very much in character. Yeah.
Yes.
The one thing that bummed me out since we're getting to that area is that they did not get Leighton Meester back to play Carrie Bishop, who I loved and was probably my favorite tertiary character on the show. Ever.
Yeah.
What, like one off character or two off character. Yeah.
And,
I did
like,
find
why?
That.
Why? Why couldn't she do it? Like
they said,
so
it was scheduling. I don't know.
Well, yeah,
you know,
but why?
I mean,
like, why
knows?
Keep the character but recast her? That just seemed like a weird choice to me. Like
Adam Brody couldn't talk her into it. You know, if they made an OC movie, he would
I
be.
No,
and
she can sing too.
And she can sing too.
It's true.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I was just like, that's not Carrie Bishop.
Yeah.
Like... yes, especially since they got everybody else.
Yeah, like, literally
everybody
everyone
else, including
sense.
People that
yeah.
were not on the show.
Yeah, Martin Starr, don't remember you from the original, but that's
doesn't
okay.
matter.
It's part of the Rob Thomas verse.
Exactly.
Well, that's another thing. Is that, like, as I was watching it, I was thinking how many of these people have worked together in other things since. I mean, you're going to be talking about Burning Love later.
Yeah.
But, like, that there's so many overlaps in the Venn diagram for all of these people, it really makes you think, so what is wrong with the people that have never been in the other stuff? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
is it that they're not cool that the people that were, you know, once or twice on Party Down didn't get to do other things later? I'm thinking of Jason Doring again.
Well, but I think some of them are probably not good at comedy.
Perhaps.
You know.
I just, you know, speaking of that, is just another thing I really enjoyed is just that you could tell that this was a product of people who really enjoyed working together and really care what they put on the screen.
Yes.
Which, you know, even like there was like the scene outside the club where people are like yelling at Logan, you know, the sound design on that was so much better than most like crowd TV stuff you get, which like is a pet peeve of mine that just, oh God, it just drives me crazy when people are like, blah, you know, like yelling out like, you know,
walla walla.
Yeah, exactly. Like go home. Like no one talks about, no one talks like that guy. And speaking of how people talk, I also super enjoyed that this group of characters in this universe can now finally fucking curse.
Yes.
Agreed. I wish they could have had more F-bombs than just
see. They use the one well, yeah. You know.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that was a favorite runner of mine, too, that Kristen Bell, every time someone would hit on her, would just be like, oh, gross. Like, yeah. Or not Kristen Bell, Veronica. That she wouldn't be, like, over the top, you know, like, seeming like right. She was like, upset or like, victimized or whatever, just like, get out of my face, you know.
I know.
including the great Dax Shepard cameo. But.
Yes.
Yeah. And the sex noise, too, which is, oh, God.
Yes. Yeah,
I mean, this is a girl who went through a lot at a young age, and not that much is going to phase her, you know, just roll her eyes.
Very true.
Yes.
Well, what else did I mean, I have a list of stuff that I liked, but I don't know. Nick, you have any other thoughts about the experience of seeing it there?
I mean, I think, seeing it on the big screen, I think it really, a lot of it really did work well as a big screen movie. I think the way it was shot, it didn't feel overly TV-ish. And I think the show was always pretty good at being cinematic. Mm-hmm. Like, even though it was low budget, it was shot on 16mm, they always had that kind of noir sensibility to it that worked well. And it, like, if even looking at it 10 years later, it still is a lot more visually interesting than a lot of shows that have, like, taken advantage more of, like, the widescreen frame and all of that. So I thought they did a good job of translating it.
What did you think of Piz working for Ira Glass?
That was fantastic. Ira Glass cameo is such red meat for me and probably a lot of other
I know, and just all fans. The, you know, I mean, the James Franco thing, you know, I thought was hilarious too, just because of, you know, they basically said it explicitly. It's like, you're doing a movie, you have to have James Franco, you know,
sure.
But, you know, he fit with that universe, whatever you may think of him, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
but, well, I mean, I only really buy James Franco playing James Franco, so it worked perfectly. Like, in this and This Is the End, like, those are the movies where I buy him. If he's playing anyone else, I still feel he's like, hey, I'm James Franco being in the Oz movie. Isn't that crazy? Whatever. You know?
What did you think of the drug metaphor conceit, like, to her going home?
Oh. Sure.
I thought it was good. I mean, because
that's what I thought.
They didn't try to pass off all these decisions she's making as like good decisions necessarily.
And I enjoyed that she was aware of it.
Yeah,
you know, that's the difference between I think the character at this age and maybe the character 10 years ago. So,
which also helps to sell the Logan stuff because they're not trying to say like, oh, Logan is the right choice for her. It's more like she's just drawn to him for better or worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably worse.
Worse.
And I don't, you know, to take Tara's side, I don't know that Piz would, peace out quite so easily, maybe.
I'm not on team anyone. I mean,
yeah,
if these are her only two choices, first of all, that's doubtful since everyone else
that
in
is dubious,
the movie
yeah.
is hitting on her all the time. But I don't know. I feel like I was trying to separate, like, Logan from the show from Jason Doring from the character in the movie.
Right.
And I still feel like he was making a lot of moves that somebody who was under suspicion for murder probably shouldn't do. Like going to a club with a girl that was dressed exactly like his Dax girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or, like, I was surprised that they made the point of him meeting her at the gate. And then he was like, I bought a cheap ticket to Palm Springs I'm not going to use. Like, that never comes up again, that he, like, bought a plane ticket and then didn't go anywhere. Like, it just seems like that would be the kind of thing they would be watching if he were a suspect in a murder case.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, I'm not a cop. I am a cop.
You watch an awful lot of cop shows, though.
I do. I mean, it just seemed like something where it's like it was a weird thing to bring up and not have it pay off in some way. Because he could have just as easily met her at
that was a weird hang a lantern on it moment that you can't do that anymore in an airport. And he's like, well, I bought a ticket. Like, who cares? Like, just don't.
Right.
Don't bother with that. You're wasting screen
time. It's okay to have those scenes in baggage claim.
Yeah.
Baggage claim is the
Everyone
new gate.
Everyone has to come out from a one point
I'm not
of
a crackpot,
egress.
But baggage claim is just as romantic as gate 34.
Even if she checked her bag, or even if she didn't check her bag, rather, she still would have had to come out at the same spot.
Yep.
Anyway.
Speaking of things that made very little sense, Veronica Mars comes back to Neptune from New York City, hasn't seen, what's the guy's name? What's the main guy?
Logan.
In 9 years, Logan calls her. And she has not only a cell phone
number.
ID comes up with his name on it, but also his picture.
I know
on her fabulous Samsung Galaxy phone, which, by the way, Samsung Galaxy, if you want a phone that people could put tracking devices in easily, Naomi suggests
pair
Samsung
it with
Galaxy.
The mini tablet that people can hack so that they can spy on
that's
you
what
all
I meant.
The time.
Yeah.
Well, if she had the phone linked to her Facebook account, his picture might come up. She made a point of saying she didn't have any Facebook friends. So there. She just, I don't know.
She's too close
the circle.
That's why I stopped watching. Yeah. So I don't know what happened.
Cell phone technology is not believable.
Yeah, my other point that was like, you know, a nitpicky thing like that. Not to say it's a stupid nitpicky thing. I explicitly do not say stupid. But when they showed the cover of Entertainment Weekly with the downward spiral of what's her face when she's like, that would have had to be out before she died. Entertainment Weekly has never done a story about the downward spiral of anybody. Never mind, put it on the cover.
But they are a Time Warner publication, so.
Fine.
What publication
true.
Would have
Us
had
Us Weekly is also a Time Warner publication, I think.
Us Weekly, yeah. Okay.
Oh, maybe not. Yeah. That's Winter Media. Whatever. I'm sure they have.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. What was your favorite Dick Casablancas line?
Oh, I don't know lines. I thought he was just all great. He was delightful.
He was super funny.
I thought you were going to say my favorite cameo, which was one of the deaf kids from Switched at Birth giving her attitude in the
oh really
in the waiting room outside the law her law firm interview.
Alexis and I were trying to figure out who was like the Kickstarter supporter that got the cameo in the movie, because originally they were offering like a cameo to whoever gave however many thousands of dollars, and it was going to be a role as a waiter in a scene between Veronica and Piz, which I either got cut or was never shot. So there must have been something else where they use that person, but
I assumed it was the Canadians at karaoke.
Oh, that makes sense.
But I don't know if that's true.
Because that was a just kind of a weird element to have in them.
And they did not seem very actory.
No.
One other thing I did like, though, is that they managed to put a lot of winks and, you know, references to the old show and, you know, kind of fan servicey things without, you know, I think dragging the story down, really. Mm-hmm. You know, there were
for sure, yeah.
They made winks and moved on, but it wasn't like, you know,
some of them were kind of forced. The FBI one.
Yeah, that was more than others, yeah, I suppose.
Was there was a mention to Kickstarter in the movie, wasn't
yes,
there?
Yes, there was.
That was a little wah-wah. But given the, you know, the circumstances, I forgive him that one.
Right, and if you didn't know, you know, I'm not sure that it would really take you out either.
I think 98% of the audience of this film...
Fair enough.
It's good. this is a very niche product right now.
Were people like applauding and stuff in the theater?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. That see, I imagine like time. When That'd stuff like fun. That would yeah. happen or when someone I mean, came it, around. Like as soon as they got to Leo, I was like, people must have been going crazy.
Oh, like the first appearance of every major character there was.
It was like
tons
when we
applause.
Went to when we went to see the Grease 20th anniversary, like every single thing that happened, people in the theater were like, woo.
My favorite moment like that was when we saw the Raiders of the Lost Ark re-release last year or year before that in the theaters. And the moment where, right near the end, where the, do you know about the fly?
Oh, yeah, where the fly. Where the
I
fly,
knew you were going to say that.
And everybody's like, oh, here it comes. And the whole audience was like, great. Just perfect crowd moment that you just don't get at home.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. You know, like the mystery was nothing, like, or the case rather. I didn't really get the whole thing with the Latino character.
Oh, with
Weevil. So I guess in the series he was sort of a bad seed, and then he had reformed
sort of.
In the midterm, and then he's the cautionary tale of Neptune at the end of the film that it can chew you up and blah blah blah. Okay,
I mean he's there to set up a sequel essentially. I think that's that whole thing with, and it was also weird to have Celeste Kane in that like literally one shot.
Yeah,
one shot, no pun intended. But so again, either something that was where they had a bigger plot that was cut out, or they're just trying to lay groundwork for more stuff.
Okay, well, here's another weird, stupid nitpick. If they're paying Mac so much money to work at Kane Software and she's so super embarrassed about it, why, when we see her at her desk, is she just at a cube and doesn't have her own office?
True. Fair.
Her hair looked great, though.
At Intel, everyone works in cubicles, including the CEO. Just FYI. All right,
but fine.
What is the fan...
You wit!
where does the fan base stand on Piz? Because I thought that was weird. Like that relationship seemed fine, but then at the end of the movie, she just kind of throws it away. And I suppose if you really are...
Everyone loved Logan.
Okay.
Well, and here's the weird thing about Piz. So she met him in college, but she was only at that college for 1 year, and then she transferred. And this is 9 years after that.
But
so,
there was some line in there about, like, they lost touch and then reconnected, I think. Like, yeah, but we're not still supposed to think she was with him that whole time.
No, I know, but still, I mean, I think it's even weirder that she wasn't with him that whole time, because it's like, she literally knew the guy for 1 year isolated, and now he's the love of her life. Like, it was, you know, I don't really buy that Logan is the love of her life either, because usually, like, anyone that you meet in around that time is probably going to be someone to get over and then
My point was, Veronica Mars is kind of a dick.
Yes.
Oh, okay. She was a super dick to Piz.
Okay,
no,
thank you. That's all I wanted to acknowledge. That's all I wanted to get.
His mother's blowout was flattening while she was still back in California. Come on.
Yeah.
Just like Veronica did to Leo when she moved over to Logan. Like, she was basically with Leo, and then she was just like, oh, sorry, bye. You know. That's the only reason I can't be 100% team Leo, because I honestly don't think she deserves Leo, because...
That is a great point. Great point.
If this movie was a couple episodes of TV, I would have been... Like, yeah, sure, let's watch some more. Mm-hmm. Like, it was fine. The writing was crisp.
Yes.
The line delivery was good. It kind of reminded me of Joss Whedon a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got the same sort of sensibility and capturing the way people of an age talk. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, this was like Joss Whedon's favorite show when it was out. Oh, Joss Whedon even did a cameo on it.
Yeah, he acted on that, that's right. Yeah.
Although then Rob Thomas said that he had never watched Buffy before he wrote the show, which is interesting. Because it's like, it is like kind of spiritually linked, but...
Yeah.
But then they had a Buffy shout out in the movie.
I don't know. I don't necessarily love I know that they had to end it that way in order for there to maybe be a sequel someday, and apparently it made like over $6,000 a screen, so it's not impossible. But I don't believe that it's the right choice for her to go back to Neptune either. I think Neptune should just be like a cut and push situation. No one is making anyone continue.
As survivor of a shitty town, I can just say get out, stay out.
Yeah, cut and push.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, I think that's the reason why they had to have that corruption stuff in there.
Sure.
So that she feel like there is something to do with the greater good and it's not just her own compulsion.
Okay.
But that is kind of the noir sensibility, too, that, like, this person maybe shouldn't be doing this with their life.
You're right.
And yet they are.
Yes.
Like, if it was just happy, like Buffy destiny, you know, this is what I have to do, then it's not as interesting, really. Like, there's not an element of, like, self-destruction to it.
Oh, and I also really liked her dad, Keith.
You do like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
He was
great,
too.
Great. Everybody loves Keith.
I will say, Veronica didn't seem super psyched about being a lawyer, either. I gotta say. Well, and why would you, really?
Why would,
yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, lawyers are the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, shall we go around the dial, people?
Sure. Since I recently heard from a commenter on previously.tv that my advocacy in favor of Broad City has made them finally start watching the show and they really love it, now I'm going to throw my critical weight behind review, especially if you've never seen an episode, please start with this week's episode, please. The first two are good.
This is the third, yeah.
This is the third episode, and it is fucking insane how good it is.
Explain the show.
Okay, so Andy Daly, I've written about it on the site as well, but Andy Daly plays Forrest McNeil, whose job is he's a critic of life experiences. So people write in and say, what's it like to go to your prom? So then he goes and has the experience and writes a review of it, including a star rating. So in last week's episode, he reviewed Racism. He did not care for it and only gave it half a star.
His lowest rating.
Yep. So even though the first two episodes are very, very good, they're definitely worth seeing, and I'm sure they're on demand. I know at least the pilot is on Hulu, and probably the second one is too. But if you were only going to start with this episode and then go back, It's so worth it. I can't even say anything about it without spoiling how great it is, but a thing happens where I fell off the couch. I was laughing so hard.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about the show is that within an episode, there's usually two or three reviews.
Three.
And then they sort of experiences carry over. So if he does something in the first one that bums him out, he's bummed out in the second one and, mm-hmm. you know, certain things happen. But the third episode really sort of like brings that formula to the forefront.
Yeah.
And the things they do with the elements they're working with, the life experiences of the third episode. Again, I don't want to give it away either, mm-hmm. but they stack upon each other in such a brilliant way that really sort of makes this show go from, like, you know, a really good B plus to like the A level territory.
Yes.
And it feels like they spent their time crafting the show before they put it in front of a camera.
Yes. And episode four,
it's a remake of an Australian show.
Right.
And they were saying, a couple of Australians on the forums were saying that in Australia, they didn't stack it. Each episode of the first season
was self-contained.
Oh,
okay.
But in the Comedy Central version,
comes up in episode four
the toll.
That, like, started in episode one.
Yeah, you can see the toll.
But yeah, episode one is episode. Like the second review he does is, what's it like to be addicted to drugs? And so he gets addicted to cocaine. And then the segment, he's like, and then I went to rehab and everything was fine. And then we find out in segment three, he's not so much rehabbed from the cocaine. So anyway, stuff like that happens. But yes, it's a... I highly recommend it. What were you
it's
say?
A show with a funny cocaine addiction rather
it's
than
a
the
show
season
with
of Archer.
It's hilarious. Yes, exactly.
I was going to ask, I have not watched it yet, even though I definitely plan to, but
yes.
Is there without spoiling, is there another show with like the same kind of absurdist sense that you would compare it to?
That's a good question.
It is. Have you ever listened to Comedy Bang Bang, the podcast?
Yeah, with Comedy Death Ray.
When they do, characters, the more involved characters, mm-hmm. It has that sensibility. There's a history to it. The characters are well informed. You know, they are. You get a sense of them pretty quickly, and it is sort of like that. A TV show, I don't know. That's my quickest thought.
Yeah,
is that it's like
I'm trying to think.
Yeah,
it has a sort of faux news, but it's not like The Daily Show. Like, everyone is an actor on it. It's not. It's.
But
like
it is The Daily Show.
Oh.
Boo.
Just watch it.
Last night's Walking Dead. Anybody else watch it?
Yeah.
John, do you watch it? No.
No.
Okay. So, spoiler. Let's do it. Spoilers.
Fun ahoy.
Wow. The title of our particle recap on the site is They Went There.
They really did.
And they really did. In this episode, Carol, who is sort of the grieving mother from episode one and two, sort of became
a warrior.
Practical badass of the show. Does what needs to be done, has killed people in the past to stop the prison base from being infected and all this sort of stuff, and has been teaching these two young girls how to be tough and survive the zombie apocalypse. And one of them kind of goes crazy. One of these kids starts thinking that, you know, zombies really aren't bad. They're just somehow the same person, just they look a little grayer. And she increasingly kind of goes a little bit bananas, and towards the end of this episode kills her sister to illustrate the point that when she comes back, she'll still be her sister. And then Carol takes that one out and shoots her.
There's a discussion before that where they're like, what are
I know, but these are the highlights.
So this little, what's happened at this point in the series, just for you, so you guys can understand, they were all living in a prison and then a horrible thing happened. They've all scattered. So
yes.
Each episode is sort of following different groups of survivors as they do whatever. And so we see how they're getting by.
Uh-huh.
So this group is Carol, Tyrese, who is Cutter from
The Wire.
From The Wire. Cutty. And these two little girls and a baby. And so then after Lizzie kills Nico. Mika.
Yeah.
Whatever. The younger girl. Carol and Tyrese have a conversation where it's like, how do we proceed from here? If we're going to Terminus, this place where it's supposedly like sanctuary for surviving humans, we can't bring Lizzie because she can't be around people. clearly.
Like Gordon and dogs. Exactly. Like my dog with other dogs.
It's exactly like that in really every way.
She's going to have to go to socialization class.
So Carol was saying, I could just take her, like I could live with her by myself and then you could go. But then Tyrese can't handle the baby all by himself and stay alive and kill zombies when he needs to. Well, because they don't even have a baby carrier, you guys. They just have to carry this baby in their arms. By the way, that baby is a liability. That's a side issue.
It's hard to have it all in The Walking Dead race.
I'm just saying, if Carol was really thinking through pragmatism, she would get rid of the baby too, but that's a side issue. So she's like, the only practical thing to do is to shoot Lizzie, and she does.
Yeah. It was quite the episode.
It was intense.
Yeah, this show sort of runs hot and cold depending on who they're following, but yes, last night's episode was really good.
Carol is a great character.
Yeah, she is really good. Yeah.
So, Burning Love.
Yeah.
Tara, did you watch the new season?
About halfway through. We've watched, I think, just over half.
This is the Bachelor parody.
The Bachelor pad parody.
So,
this season.
Going back years, Tara has kind of curated a lot of television for me with an impressive track record. Yeah, you know. Despite... She goes back to the one semi-dud that she ever gave me and never forgives herself, but...
Desperate Housewives.
That's it. I knew you remembered it 10 years later.
I did.
Yeah. But Burning Love is something that I discovered through her writings on Previously TV. It was originally a web series. And part of the reason I wanted to bring it up is not just because they, E! Kind of dumped in Netflix style its entire third season.
Yeah.
Not only dumped it, but in the middle of the night.
No, it was at night. It was like the first episode started at like midnight on the East Coast on a Saturday.
Yeah. Right, right.
That's nuts.
But it also shares a huge number of cast with the Party Down Veronica Mars verse.
Yes.
And just, you know, I have a list of like 20 comedians and other actors that you would recognize. That is about probably a third of the people involved with this show. Ben Stiller is an EP on it, but yep. Ken Marino.
And he also has a recurring role as a past Bachelor.
Right, right. He was in season one, I think. Right, yeah.
Yes,
and his wife too, Sarah Taylor, is on it.
Christine Taylor.
Christine Taylor plays
the woman who won his heart in their season.
Right. Ken Marino, who is Vinny Van Lo and Veronica Mars and one of the stars of Party Down, directs a bunch of the episodes. And
his wife wrote it.
Right, yeah. Right.
And there's a lot of other Party Down people in it.
Ryan Hansen. Yes. I think all the guys who were who starred on Party Down have been on this in one way or another. And, you know, Adam Scott, you know, like Joe Latrullio from Brooklyn Nine-Nine is on. I mean, it's just like an impressive list, and it just nails every trope of The Bachelor in... You know, I think, Tara, you wrote that they don't have to heighten it that much.
No, I was telling Dave, because Dave doesn't watch The Bachelor, and there have been points where I've had to tell him, like, no, getting all the women together and making them do, like, a fake roast, that's a real thing that happened on The Bachelor.
Right.
Puppet date or whatever.
They find ways to, like, you know... Like the over enthusiastic applause for the most banal things that they get, and they just find a way to put a really like smart and intelligent twist on it, and then you know, I just think it's great. So
season three is their Bachelor pad parody, and so they're all like scrambling over each other to try and win what we find out is $900.
Yeah, there's this might illustrate like Ken Marino is lecturing Julie, who was the Bachelorette the season before, because they're a team now trying to win the $900. He's like, yeah. $400 each. And she kind of thinks about it and she's like, well, what happened to the other $100? And he's like super condescending. He's like, it's not $1,000, Julie. So I don't know. Paul Rudd is on it. You know, I don't know if he's even going to air it anymore, but you can find it. I know season one is on Netflix DVD and you can, it's definitely available on...
It's all still on Yahoo, which is what it was produced for, the screen.yahoo.com. If you can find it, their site is such a mess.
It's just so nice that, again, like Party Down and like Veronica Mars, all these people obviously really want to work together, and they're creating art for probably pennies. But it's also nice that some good is coming out into the world from the horrible, horrible Bachelor franchise. So
agreed.
I would recommend that you give it a chance.
And you don't even have to watch The Bachelor. No. I've never watched it.
Funny.
Burning Love is still really good.
It's really fun.
No.
So there is now an Orphan Black season 2 trailer out. It starts in just a little bit over a month. And I think it looks good. I think it looks like season two is a little more hopefully coherent than the first season was. I have to say, I found the first season, even though I found it interesting, I really like the character work and stuff, it felt a little bit like the first two seasons of Lost to me, where it just keeps you on the hook with like the promise of revelations. And then once you, well, first of all, the answers aren't all that great. And then also, like, once you've gotten the answers, you realize that a lot of what they were doing was, you know, they just kind of burned through it, and there's not a lot of like stuff that comes back. It's just like stuff that you were waiting for that is like now they've moved on from. And it looks like season two, it looks a little more like Alias to me, which I think is a good thing. And now that they have built up this premise that now they can hopefully play with a little more, with like the clones working together and stuff and doing different kinds of missions to try to advance their cause of just, you know, figuring out who's behind this and everything. And even though I was sort of lukewarm as a whole on season one, I think hopefully season two will be a bit better.
Any deficiencies in the story, I sort of filled in with Toronto gazing, trying to figure out all the places they were. 'Cause what I love about this series is that it's obviously set in Toronto, and they don't go to absolute lengths to hide it.
They don't go to any lengths
to hide
it.
No, they do go to some. Like, they genericize it a bit, but not enough to it for it to be not Toronto.
I mean, Allison lives in Scarborough.
I know, but if you don't know, like, Scarborough could be anything. Once in a while, you see an Ontario license plate here and there that they haven't hid. It's just like, it's Toronto, but they don't go out of the way to... Nobody ever says, here in Toronto, you know what I mean? Like, I like how it's an interesting Canadian program that is obviously has... you know, an eye on international markets. Speaking of which, as an aside, we're doing this thing on the forums, the name game, which, Nick, you started off, you brought us a game time where we're doing the before and after Jeopardy style thing. We brought that onto the forums. And one of them that somebody did was something Falcon Beach. And Falcon Beach was this Canadian soapy kind of thing. And apparently when they produced that show, they created two takes for every scene. They had one that was geographically Canadian and one that was geographically American. And then they sold one scene would be like, oh man, I got to drive to Detroit or I have to drive to Windsor. And then they would package them up and sell the American one.
That's very clever.
Yeah.
That's classic Canadian ingenuity.
But anyways, getting back to Orphan Black.
I don't know what I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
Just that Nick sounds like an anti-Canadian bigot for all this criticism of the show.
He's kind of the worst. Kind of the worst that way.
More excitement, Twitter related. Sarah, if she were here, would be reporting that one of the contestants from Project Runway : Under the Gun. Eye roll. I believe his name Sam has gotten addicted to Sarah's write-ups on the show and has been tweeting them, which is awesome. And also this week, Andy Daly tweeted a link to my story about the racism episode of Review. And then just today, Carrie Preston, who plays the great Elsbeth Tassioni on The Good Wife, tweeted a link to my story about her character. And that is my tiny triumph.
Yay.
Hooray.
Yay. Right, you don't know what that means. I'm going to let you know what that means. It's time for the no-nack, the goateed canon. In the canon,
timeline.
No-nack.
Very, very good episodes of a series, and we vote on them. In the no-nack, we look at the shittiest episodes of an otherwise good series. A very indicative past inductee into the no-nack was Battlestar Galactica's Black Market episode, which you may remember. It's the one where Apollo is suddenly on a new ship with this new love of his life, who's a prostitute, and Bill Duke is there and stuff. So in that spirit, Nick and John have brought us a joint submission for...
First time ever that two guests have collaborated on a canon/no-nack.
Yes.
Submission.
And we hope it will be a spectacular train wreck.
In keeping with the segment, that would be lovely.
With no further ado, take it away.
Yeah, well, Nick and I, you know, when we heard we were going to be on the podcast, we both realized that we'd recently done Canon submissions, and we both realized that we're also 3-0 on Canon submissions lifetime.
Hell yeah.
So we've done all that. But but we decided to collaborate on a Nonak, which is very exciting. And what we have for you is a Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode. We felt like doing season 6 or 7 would be kind of like shooting boring fish in a barrel, and we both like a challenge. So we were doing
staking fish in a barrel.
Staking fish in a
barrel. Staking vampire fish in a
barrel. Boom. So we were doing season 3, episode 10, Amends, the Christmas episode with the Miracle Snow. And Nick and I are going to alternate by Axe telling you about the plot, and then we'll give our, you know, final thoughts and throw it out to the group.
I love this already.
All right.
Nick, take it away.
So we open with a flashback to Ireland in 1800 whatever.
And, yeah.
I mean, you know, these period flashbacks are always hit or miss in the Whedonverse. Sometimes they're pretty cool and interesting, but spoiler alert, in this particular episode, they're all terrible.
Oh, boy. You win some and you lose some.
I mean, so the point about this one is we're seeing one of Angel's many, many kills from his evil days, and there's nothing special about it except that it does do a great job of showcasing David Boreanaz's terrible, terrible accent. Work,
so bad.
Which we'll discuss at length later, but for now, just enjoy the clip.
Daniel, where are you going?
You're not human.
Not of late, no.
What do you want?
What happens that I'm hungry, Daniel, and seeing as that you're somewhat in me debt.
Please, I can't.
A man playing at cards should have a natural intelligence or a great deal of money, and you're sadly lacking it.
Oh, you'll never get my lucky runes.
Again, we'll go into this more later, but I think it's just a great combination of bad accent work and then also just not even trying to do the accent on some words.
That
just
was
being
amazing.
Like, I don't know.
And so, with someone who can actually do the accent by comparison,
I know, yeah,
just
like,
in
least,
case you weren't
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, at least cast other people who are also bad at doing it. Because yeah. So they did bring in some pretty
David,
bad accents.
David Boreanaz has to step on a accent half box. He's not up to sit.
So after that, we come back to present-day Sunnydale on the only street in Sunnydale, like, aka the back lot at the corner of Olympic and Stewart Street in Santa Monica, which I used to drive by often. Angel is taking a walk to do some brooding, feeling very alienated from the dozens of extras who have sprung up all of a sudden to do their Christmas shopping. I don't know where you can buy Christmas presents on this street, since, as I recall, there's only the Sunnydale Cinema, the Espresso Pump, and the Magic Shop. But regardless, he runs into Buffy. It's tense and awkward, blah, blah, blah. They're not supposed to be hanging out with each other, lest Buffy steal his soul again with her magic vagina. So they're just kind of hastily saying their goodbyes.
We've all been there, right, ladies?
Oh, boy.
Zoe on American Horror Story is nodding.
And then lo and behold, Angel sees the ghost of the Irish gambler that he killed in the opening, and that's our big stinger to close out the teaser, that Angel is tormented by his past sins. That's what this entire episode is going to be. You'll pay for the whole seat, but you'll only use the edge. Now I'll pass it off to Tom.
Oh my god, and just before I move out, like, I mean, the sets for the high school and, you know, were so much better than that street. I mean, I kept waiting for them to run into, like, Rory Gilmore. It was so obviously a backlot. But anyway, Act 2. This starts with at the school. The kids have a discussion about what they're doing for Christmas. Xander makes an entirely gratuitous, shoehorned, and yet very Xander-esque comment about Giles having, you know, not forgiving Angel for having killed Miss Callender. It's like
last
very
season.
Shut up, Xander. Yeah, very
incorporate
shut up
the previously into the dialogue, please.
Right, and then we get this clip.
So, you doing anything special?
Tree, nog, roast beast. Just me and Mom, and hopefully an excess of gifts. What are you doing for Christmas?
Being Jewish, remember, people? Not everybody worships Santa.
I just meant for vacation.
Nothing fun. Oz and I had planned, but I guess that's off.
Well, I'll be enjoying my annual Christmas Eve camp out. See, I take my sleeping bag outside and I go to sleep on the grass.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, I like to look at the stars, you know, feel the whole nature vibe.
I thought you slept outside to avoid your family's drunken Christmas fights.
Yes, and that was a confidence I was hoping you would share with everyone.
Well, I'll be in Aspen, skiing. With actual snow.
I hear that helps.
It must be a drag to be stuck here in Sweatydale. But I'm thinking of you. Okay, I'm done.
She certainly has reverted to form.
It's not her fault. After what happened, we gotta cut her some slack.
That's the Christmas spirit.
Hello, still Jewish. Hanukkah spirit, I believe that was.
We get it, you're Jewish!
So, bookending that scene is Willow's cutesy brittleness about being Jewish, which is about 1,000 times less cute than she and the show seem to think it is. I really can't stand, you know, she was never my favorite character to begin with, but that entire bit is just nails on a chalkboard for me.
Well, they only brought that up like 3 times over the course of the entire show, I think, that she was Jewish, and they really hit it hard those 3 times.
They only brought
times.
That up because Jews run Hollywood. Whoops.
Hit the lawsuit button there, dude.
Also, weirdly, when Xander's talking about the 10th, he's telling this to Willow, who's known him since he was like 5.
I know, yeah, that's like, what I thought. Like, yeah. If Cordelia knows it, why doesn't Willow know
it? Yeah, yeah. I mean, Cordelia admittedly rules, but this is the only thing we get of her in this episode, so... In conclusion, shut up, Xander, shut up, Willow, shut up, Tent. So then we move on to one of the few good scenes, Oz and Willow. You know, we can just kind of remove Oz, I guess, from the known because he's good in this. The only reason this scene works is because it's 90% him, really, in my opinion. The part where she asks for a hug at the end is cute, but, you know, moving on.
Her pants. Can we just talk about her pants?
Please. Oh my god, please.
We were trying
to
figure out what that
color
was.
We could all wear those pants at the same time.
Oh my god.
But also, what was that color?
MC Willow.
Because it wasn't periwinkle and it wasn't lavender.
No, it was just like light wash jeans. They were hideous.
But it had a little something in it. A little something.
They were so big.
And she was also doing the Jerry Seinfeld pant shirt tucked in with no belt.
With no belt. Yeah,
that's right. Oh my god, it's so
all right,
true.
Continue, sorry.
Okay, then we get back to Buffy, back on the back lot, shopping for trees. She's chatting with Joyce. They mention Faith a little bit. Then she takes a walk that looks like about the length of a football field before getting to this spot of dead leaves and this, you know, salesman who should be overselling the trees, not, you know, checking out this place that's 200 feet down the road. Makes a comment about, oh, we don't know why this, you know.
Remember this. If this will come
remember
back
this
later
for later.
Episode.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but also, he then tries to sell the dead trees to her,
yeah. Which weird. Yeah, like isn't
that give you a really good deal on these twigs?
Will you give me a really good deal on a fire hazard? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, everybody's got to eat.
There is, you know, in the spirit of full even disclosure, vampires. there is a good shout out to Band Candy when Buffy's mom and Giles hooked up, which they keep a pin in for a surprisingly long time until, you know, almost the end of the season. But then we get the first of maybe 983 shots of Angel dreaming shirtlessly and whimpering in bed. And I realize this isn't saying much, but that's maybe not playing to his acting strengths. Then Buffy goes to see Faith. It's a pretty quick scene. They have a little bit of detente, which sets up something that happens later in the episode. And then Angel comes to see Giles. Again, Giles we can exempt from the no-neck because he's really good in this. But this scene is pretty much the only thing he has to do in this entire episode. Everything else is just like, hey.
Yeah, and you're like, open this book.
Go that way for this book. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But his work in the scene is marred by Angel, when he gets the first glimpse of the first evil in the form of Miss Callender, whimpering like a schoolgirl, which, you know, I cite what I just said as, again, maybe not playing to his strengths. And I don't know, he's a vampire who's been around for like 300 years. Whatever mojo they're working on him, you'd think he could get a sentence out to Giles and be like, yeah, this is what I'm seeing. What does it mean? This is why I came over here. Yeah. So that's the end of Act 2. So back to you, Nick.
So we come back with another Angel dream scene.
So defeated.
Which means another flashback. And the accent has not gotten better, but the hair has definitely gotten worse. I'd say at this point he's rocking a mane the size of Richard Marx in his heyday. And I don't mean Richard Marx's hair. I mean actually the size of Richard Marx. And again,
not only that, but it looks like it's like curly and he's brushed it out somehow.
Yeah.
It's so
It looks
bad.
Like an actual lion.
Like it's like a beaver pelt. Yeah. It's terrible. Continue.
So the only point of this time of the scene is to you know, again remind us that Angel used to do some bad shit, and also the twist is that we see that Buffy is sharing his dream, and now she knows what's going on with him, and he knows that she knows, because he actually sees her right there in the dream before he wakes up. And I think there could have been an actually interesting plot device here if they had used kind of the element of them like going between each other's dreams and trying to solve it that way, but they don't. It's just a means of providing Buffy the exposition that this is what's going on with Angel.
And I always like the Slayer's power to invade dreams.
Yeah,
but not in this episode.
Not in this episode, no. And not when they used that weird Buffy in a catatonic Buffy episode in season 5 so that Sarah Michelle Gellar could go off and shoot Saturday Night Live.
Oh, that's right. God.
But anyway, not to get too sidetracked, we've got enough bad episodes to deal with here.
Sidebar, Buffy also has bad hair in this episode.
Oh,
she has
God,
really
yes.
Stupid,
those bangs.
Sticky, outy,
what the...
short
yes.
bangs.
No, those are such a distraction.
That was literally the first thing Nick said to me on
IM about this episode. Like, what is with those bangs?
It's like she cut them with like child safety scissors.
I know, yeah. It's like she walked
to get back
into,
at
like,
somebody.
It's true.
Yeah. So Angel gets up to go out and brood some more, and the first evil slash ghost of Jenny Callender is back, and now we get into the ghosts morphing into other ghosts thing, which is Jenny morphs into the gambler, and if you're watching this episode and this morphing stuff really does it for you, you're going to freaking love season 7, I say, shaking my head sadly.
It really looks bad.
So Buffy goes to Giles for advice, and he tells her Angel already showed up asking the same thing, and Giles and Xander both grudgingly agree to help research a solution, and of course Willow shows up too. There's also a great episode if you love aimless library research scenes. And while they're doing research together, Willow tells Buffy about Oz coming over to watch videos, as we still said back in these days. But she's kind of nervous about how things will go, and Buffy just says she'll have to show Oz that he comes first. And the expression on Willow's face, if you look at it retrospectively with what happens later in the episode, she's obviously thinking, oh, Buffy's telling me I have to screw his brains out. Gotcha. And then we cut back over to Angel, still being tormented by the parade of victims. He makes a very valid point in his defense that all these murders are really committed by the demon inside him and not Angel himself.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't you?
A demon isn't a man. I was a man once.
Oh, yes. And what a man you were.
A drunken, whoring layabout. And a terrible disappointment to your parents.
I was young. Never had a chance to...
To die of syphilis? You were a worthless being before you were ever a monster.
Stop it!
The guy drunkenly having fun and falling off a bar stool is a lot more interesting and compelling than the wax-chested guy writhing around in bed for no good reason.
That's actually, that 3-second flashback is my favorite part of the episode.
It's good. Yeah.
The other thing about the flashback we didn't mention was his mustache.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The stash.
Yeah.
It really is like a 70s porn stash. / biker cop.
1870s porn stash.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, so like this is the thesis of the episode, basically, because Angel was a stupid, horny teenager when he was a teenager. He's actually a horrible person and is responsible for all his crimes as a vampire, whatever.
Wait, it was supposed to be his teenager years in the flashbacks?
I think he was supposed to be like 18 or 19 when he was turned. Yeah.
All right.
So now we're back in the library. Almost everyone is asleep, rightfully so, because they're in this episode. And and here's where Buffy and Angel have dream sex, by which I mean they're in each other's dreams having sex, and both clearly enjoying it in their separate locations. I don't know, I guess if you need padding in a script like they clearly do in this one, you can do worse than a sex scene. It's certainly a nice break from the research, and Buffy is very lucky that no one walks in on her writhing on the floor. This is also before the days of cell phone cameras, thankfully.
But the geography of that sex scene was very confused. Like it was.
Well, they were both bottoms in that sense.
I don't know. Fair enough.
He withdraws his comment.
That's not all that gets withdrawn. Okay. Oh.
Speaking of coming first, but...
Oh,
I know.
Sarah's gonna be so sad when she listens back to this. God damn you, Time Warner.
Oh, worse.
The only good thing that comes out of this is Buffy telling Giles that she had another dream, and he's like, "What happened in this dream?" And she's like, "Certainly not hot, sweaty fornication." And then
she held that pause for so long.
Yeah,
it was great.
He was like, "Oh, you were fucking. Okay, never mind." So we pop back over to Angel's place, so the first evil is Jenny Callender can finally reveal the purpose of all this, which is that it wants him to kill Buffy. And we're back to John.
Okay, so then we move on to research. and then Buffy and Xander go to see Willie, Nick's favorite character.
Yes.
Very talky scene. In a very talky scene, but I also, they're using him as an information broker, but he tried to kill her in season two. Maybe cut off the relationship.
He's the least consistent character. They just bring him up when they're like, oh shit, we need something to fill out 5 minutes.
Okay, I know. And at the end, he's like, hey kid, Merry Christmas. It's all serious. And she's like, thanks. And what? Like, I don't get it. Then there's this blabbity scene on the street with between Buffy and Xander about just how they don't know anything. Like,
50 minutes.
Not for the first, not the first time this episode that people are like, well, we don't know anything, and then cut. Yeah. Okay, so you were speaking of filler. Yeah. then the Barry White scene, which again is lovely. It's Willow and Oz. Willow, as Nick alluded to, kind of offers herself, and Oz tells her it's not the right time, but he thanks her for her support. Basically.
The detail that I really liked in that scene was the fact that chilling in an ice bucket on the table were two sodas.
Yes, yeah, that was great.
Oh,
yeah.
That was super cute. I noticed that too.
Yeah.
And actually, I remember reading the Joss's script for this episode where it says, and there's a bucket of ice with soda in it. Don't you hate TV?
Although, I wasn't sure if Willow's parents would approve of the decor of the room at this point. It did seem a little, I don't know, loungy. I just didn't think that's what their living room probably normally looked like, but then we cut to Buffy's house where they're doing Christmas decorations. Joy says, angel or star, which that's like...
He says angels on top again?
Yeah, angels on top again. Yeah, which is, I guess... I don't know. I don't want to think about it. And then Buffy's like, what? And she's like, angel or star? And she's like, star, obviously. So
I was led to believe angel couldn't be on top.
then Faith comes by, which is nice. They complete their detente, and there's a moment that I love when Faith like deprecatingly says her presents are crappy, and Joyce just nods. she's like, they probably are. It's true. But then Angel, of course, totally ruins it. I wanted to see a Faith, Buffy, and Joyce Christmas, and instead he and Miss Callender conspire to do some more acting. and then Buffy runs over to Giles, and even he has this very shoehorned and forced bit of dialogue about like how you may have to kill him again. Can you do that? It's not good, even for him. By his standards, really, really not good. And then the last scene of this segment is back at the mansion with the First and Angel, and you can roll that clip.
I can't do it.
You have to do it. What else are you good for?
Get away from me.
Couldn't you just feel her? Couldn't you almost smell her skin? You never were a fighter, Angel. Don't start trying now. Sooner or later, you will drink her.
I'll never hurt her.
You were born to hurt her. Have you learned nothing? As long as you are alive.
And I'll die.
You don't have the strength to kill yourself.
I don't need strength. I just need the sun to rise.
You're not supposed to die. This isn't the plan. It'll do.
So three things. First, leading into that scene was Giles's line, can you do that? And he says, I can't do it. This show was a big offender with the ironic call and response.
Yeah.
It could have done with about 90% less of it. Not every show can be Archer, and that's okay, but it's better not to try. The other things about the scene is, even the First is getting bored with Angel at this point. It's like, would you just do it already? God. And it's kind of cute for Miss Callender as the First to even pretend there was a plan, because we all know from season 7 that there really, really wasn't.
No way.
And that leads us to the last act.
All right. So I don't have notes on this part, but it's basically just two scenes. First of all, Buffy finally figures out through Giles being like, oh, look at this. There's something about like the priests that bring about the First, that nothing can grow above or below. And she's like, oh yeah, Christmas tree shopping. Okay. And then she goes down and digs a hole and finds the eyeless priests down there and like fights them, scares them off or whatever. And then magically just runs right into Angel where he's awaiting the sunset. Outside.
Sunrise.
Sunrise, yes. and you know, there's this all back and forth about let me die, no, I won't let you die, let me die, blah, 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 and here's a little bit of that.
Am I a thing worth saving, huh? Am I a righteous man? The world wants me gone.
What about me? I love you so much. And I tried to make you go away. I killed you and it didn't help. And I hate it. I hate that it's so hard. And that you can hurt me so much. I know everything that you did because you did it to me. God, I wish that I wished you dead. I don't. I can't.
It should be said, contrary to David Boreanaz, Sarah Michelle Gellar does sell this stuff pretty well, even in kind of shoddily written scenes like this.
That never end.
Yeah, that never end. I mean, it's basically like this goes on for like 10 minutes. but finally, she sort of talks him into not doing it, and he's like, you know, you should stick around, do good stuff. It's always hard. And then magically, we have our finale, which is that it starts to snow, and it's like hard for me to even get this part out because it makes zero sense to anyone who has ever lived somewhere where it snows, which I believe all of us have.
It makes it miracle snow, dude.
It's snow that blocks out the sun somehow, which, like, it's possible to have snowfall and it still be sunny out. Like, that's where you get snow blindness and stuff like that from. But it's like the weatherman is like, yeah, it's snowing, and don't expect to see the sun today. Those are two totally separate things. They could have just made it be overcast that day. Like,
it'd have been really big flakes.
But
a lot about weather you don't understand. Like, vampires on Hollywood. What?
And you know, then we wrap up. We see everybody enjoying the snow, and there it is.
Speaking of really big flakes, there's like two of them when they're on the hill, and then when they get into the street, there's enough to cross country ski on. Like, yeah, you know.
But
yeah, so
and it looks exactly like cotton batting because it is.
Yeah.
Do you want to give thoughts, Nick, or any other thoughts?
So there's a lot of, you know, when you're doing 22 episodes a year, there's going to be some, A, they're going to be kind of filler, and B, they're going to kind of be hastily written, and that's just the nature of TV, okay. But if you're going to do stuff like that, I much prefer the Buffy episodes that are just kind of frothy and silly, as opposed to this one where they're really trying to do really emotional stuff, and it's so just, you can just tell that he, like, dashed off this script in a few hours, and this is the kind of stuff that he can do in his sleep, and probably did. But to devote an episode like this to just this emotional stuff, which, first of all, like, as we've established, David Boreanaz could not sell very well at this point. I just think it was a huge misfire.
Yeah. I broke down my notes for this part into things I like, which I've already covered.
Yeah. You can count on
there
like,
are like two things.
Two fingers, yeah.
Things I hate, a lot of which were also already covered. So I'll just skip onto the macro criticisms, which is, first of all, the first evil as a concept.
Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. As Sarah and I, when I lived in London 10 years ago, Sarah and I used to have a weekly call, and we didn't ask each other how we were or what was going on in our lives. We talked about the first evil. It was therapy for us. Mostly trying to figure out where the first good fits into this first evil scenario, trying to figure out if they meant the miracle snow to be some kind of divine intervention, which is totally obviously belied by the weatherman being like, hey, it's dark when it snows. Like, you know, and how boring season 7 was, and just, oh God. And this episode is responsible for all that, you know, gives birth to all that. So another reason that it belongs in the Nonak, I feel.
Speaking of things this episode gives birth to, by the way, I think I had it written down at some point. when Buffy and Angel have dream sex, I like to think that Buffy got pregnant and that baby was Twilight. Because that's where all that shit comes from. Even as much as Joss hates Twilight, he basically inspired it right there. I'm sure that a young Stephanie Meyer was watching that and being like, ooh, if I do this times a million, it'll be way better.
Can I say, too, that it's more uncomfortable to watch people dreaming about sex than actually having sex?
Oh, yeah. So
just
awkward.
Not cute.
Especially when it's later described as like, it wants me to lose my soul in Buffy again.
God. Anyway, I am sorry that Sarah can't go into more detail about this, but I think I've made my point. The last thing I'll say just before I kick it out to Dave and Tara is just it's funny that you say that about the clunker episodes in a season, because the episodes leading up to this Homecoming, Band Candy, Lover's Walk, The Wish, following Gingerbread, Helpless, The Zeppo, which admittedly I did not like, but I at least admire the concept. Bad Girls, Consequences, Doppelganglang, Enemies, Earshot, Choices, The Prom, Graduation Day 1 and 2. This is a stinker compared to all those.
Yeah.
And a huge, almost unprecedented run of like really solid episodes.
It was a great season.
Yeah.
So, I don't care for Homecoming out of those, because I didn't usually like the David Greenwalt episodes. I thought they were a different tone, but like most of those are really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably a Cordelia thing. If you're not, you know, in the bag for her, maybe that's not going to be your favorite. Or maybe it's just, maybe it is Greenwalt.
It was the Buffy portion of that episode. I didn't care for like the...
Guys,
that's fair.
The Slayer Fest, yeah. Whatever.
You're collaborating.
This is why we sat across the table. I can't quite reach Nick to choke. But yeah, again, it's just, you know, against that standard. And that's why I think that's one of the reasons I think this is so no-knackable, even though, you know, there are obviously worse episodes later. I think in a run that was so great, it really sticks out. So,
actually, one more thing I just wanted to point out. I do wonder a little bit if Joss and or the WB wanted to have an episode like this to kind of much later set up the Angel spinoff, to like really hit the point that Angel has a lot to atone for. And therefore, he might want to go off on his own and do that. I don't know if that was part of the thinking behind this.
You know, since you say that, we were sold so much on like Angel nailing puppies to doors and and doing like the unimaginable stuff. And like these idiots are the ones
it's totally true.
Housemaid-y, big deal.
Yeah, like Angel is supposed to be sadistic even compared to Spike.
And on top of that, what's with the cheap shit help at the party that like everyone's serving their own punch? Okay, I'm done. Really.
Emily Gilmore would be appalled.
I think you're other than everything. I mean, as soon as it started and it was like Angel in olden times, I was like, fuck yes, this is no neck. But because he's so bad and he's so overmatched. Like, you would think three seasons in, someone on the show would have been like, he can't handle this. Like, don't make him do it. It's going to be terrible. But they didn't. And this happened and we all had to see it. But I think the main point is the one that you just made, which is it's the worst. It's like the biggest dip in such a strong, strong season that it really sticks out for how completely shitty and pointless it is. And like, it's so hard to make a good Christmas episode anyway. So then to like layer that on top, it's like,
and you normally shouldn't bother. And God knows we don't need a Buffy Christmas episode.
As everyone keeps saying throughout the episode, like, it's hot. It's hot there. It's California. Like, Buffy doesn't need to have Christmas.
Yeah.
Pretend she's Jewish, too. It doesn't matter. Like, it was just two things being married together that had no reason to be married, plus multiple scenes of people standing around a whiteboard looking at books.
Mm-hmm.
Really wasted everybody's time. Dave.
I like to cede my time to an expert in the field. And
so here we go.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me, Extra Hot Great, to another episode. I understand you're talking about Buffy and Men's.
That's correct.
Well, I have this to say. I thank you. I know I am an expert in field. I want to say, at end of episode, snow is falling from sky. The sun is coming. Sunrise, very bad for vampires. They have their moment, and then they walk into town. The town, very quiet. Nobody around. Snow on street, very lumpy. How is that possible? And for that reason, I vote this is no neck wallet. Take it away, Dave. Thanks, Dracula. I'm also going to vote that this is no neck material. Tara, how about you?
Oh, yeah, it's no neck for sure.
All right. I struggled with the theme to represent something that is both terrible and success in its terribility. So with that... Episode 10 events. You're hereby inducted into the no knack.
Americans love a winner. Yeah. I will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for winner and loser of the week. And Tara, take it away.
All right. If Sarah were here, she would be saying the winner of the week is the estate of V.C. Andrews, because we learned this week that not only is Lifetime making Petals on the Wind, which is the sequel to Flowers in the Attic, but it's also going to make Seeds of Yesterday and, as Sarah herself requested, My Sweet Audrina. So this is both a winner of the week and a tiny triumph, I'm going to say, for Sarah D. Bunting.
Nice.
Made it happen through The Secret. And loser of the week... Unlike the star of Veronica Mars, Kristen Bell, and her husband Dax Shepard, who are really well representing celebrity parents in their anti-paparazzi taking pictures of kids crusade, losers of the week are a tie. Kenan Thompson and Kristen Cavallari. Kenan Thompson, because he went on Late Night with Seth Meyers talking about how his wife is pregnant and that he plans to be golfing or doing something when his wife is in labor, which is probably a joke, but still not a good joke to make. Doesn't make you look good. Since the last time we heard you interviewed, you were saying that black women were not ready to be on SNL. Maybe you should not give interviews anymore. And Kristen Cavallari, who told Fox Business Network, which why is she even on it? That she and her husband, Jay Cutler, who is a football player, I guess, have not vaccinated their child and don't plan to vaccinate their next child. So it kicked off another round of the fucking anti-vax quote debate, unquote, which is not a debate. It just whenever a celebrity has to give credence to that side of the argument, not an argument, it only makes the cause worse off. And if you care to research this yourself, you can see what the effects of the anti-vaxxer movement have had, particularly in Africa. If you are a parent, please vaccinate your child. Don't be like Kristen Cavallari in this or any other respect.
All right. We're going to give Sarah a call and see if her internet is back. And then we'll see what's what. Back in a bit. Do you know what time it is, guys? It's time to play Game Time without Sarah Bunting.
Non-regulation.
Time Warner is probably the worst thing around. All right, so Sarah can't make it. Her internet is still out, so we are going to soldier on. This is the fourth game time of the season. I think we're going to have to put this in the non-regulation camp now that Sarah cannot be here. And it's going to be a little bit different because originally this was designed for four people playing. So
fucking Time Warner.
Yeah. Last week, Nick put a win in the guest column. So the standings are 2 for the guests, 1 for Sarah, 0 for Tara. But as we said, no points will be awarded today because we're just playing for shits and giggles.
Well, it's also the equivalent of like Tara being like the arm wrestler who like lets the person be like, think they're winning. And then just like,
no.
I can tell you, Tara tries to win every time.
I do.
If she was playing against a 2-year-old who couldn't speak, she would be like, yeah, you lost.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that you're purposely throwing it. I'm just saying, like, it's basic, you know, it'll be very easy for...
I did beat my niece at Candyland at Christmas time, and she cried. And I didn't intend to beat her, but that's what happened. I really felt bad.
Life's tough, kid.
Well... Even in Candyland.
It's your personal, the gaming
learned debt. Disappointment early.
Look, that's part of why you make kids play board games.
So all right. We are going to play Secret Code Word. That pits guests versus hosts.
Hmm.
In Secret Code Word, each team has a clue giver and a guesser.
Oh.
The clue giver will be given a... TV-related word, and they have to give the guesser one word clue that is not the name of a TV show, a rhyme, or a part or form of the word. Okay?
Understood.
Wow. This is password, if you know what you're doing with password. A violation of those three rules will result in a point for the other team. I'll be playing for Sarah. Originally, we were going to switch teams around. You guys can still switch who clicked, but I'll have to give all the clues for Tara because... I know what all the words are.
Yep.
Okay, so the teams alternate giving clues until one team gets it right and is awarded the point. Okay, so everybody involved is playing every round. This is not, we're not separating the questions.
Got it.
The team that goes first has the option of forcing the other team to give the first clue. So if you're going first, you can make the other team go first. That is good in the situation where you think the first clue will not help. That it's going to need more than one clue to actually guess it.
Right.
Okay,
you can only give one word at a time.
That's right, one word, and then it goes to the other team.
Parse word style.
Yes. Okay. So each round will therefore start with the team that lost the last point, but we'll let our guests go first.
Dave, could you just repeat what's verboten?
Oh, yeah. No TV show names, no rhymes, and no words that are part... piece of the secret word.
Got it. Okay.
Okay, so if the secret word is surprised, you can't say surprise. You can't say...
Perprised.
Yeah. You can't say...
And that. If it was fancy, I couldn't say schmancy.
That's right. If you would like to play along blind, just continue to listen. But if you want to listen with the answers in front of you, go to the Extra Hot Great Forum topic for this episode, where I will list all the clues given during this game time.
Okay.
Are we ready to play Secret Code Word?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So, Nick, flip your first question. This is the word.
I'm going to force you on this
one. Okay. Kitten.
Just a point of clarification. Am I trying to guess a TV show title or just a TV thing?
A TV word.
Okay.
There are no TV show titles in this game.
Okay.
Kitten.
Puppy.
Tangerine.
Pass.
Poker.
Spike.
Abbreviated.
Kitty.
Eating.
Alf.
Citrus.
Vampires.
Blood.
Orange.
Clementine.
Man.
I see now. Snack. This is going to be my last clue.
Chick. Okay.
Abbreviated.
This is your last clue. And we're going to move on.
No. Yeah.
Kitten, snack, eating, vampires, poker. Somebody who plays...
Oh, I just got it. God damn it.
And?
Spike.
Nope, it's Clem.
Clem.
That's what I was doing.
Clementine.
Clem,
I guess Spike.
All right, so you get to go again. Nobody got that point. Okay. Number two.
I'm glad I was on the right track with Spike, at least.
Oh, okay. Ambiguous.
Xander?
Perfectly.
Is it Jedediah Springfield?
It's one word. Come on,
sorry.
Jesus. Boo.
Krabobble.
Perfectly.
Word.
Oh, God.
I lost it. I don't know. But,
Springfield.
Cromulent.
All right, 1 point. You're up again, Nick.
Okay. Stroke.
Stroke? Different.
Nate.
Narm.
Ooh, okay.
Remember, you can pass it over to
as pity.
What was it?
Pity.
Team.
Attitude.
Baracus.
Woo! Go team marriage. Snow globe.
Tommy.
Hospital.
Surname.
Westfall.
Giant.
No.
Dragons.
Hodor.
Yeah.
I'm just setting these up for Tara.
That's why you have the ability.
Yeah,
to
I should be using the fast moment. I don't know. Oh. Sit.
Ubu.
All right, now score break time.
Guests have two, hosts have five.
Okay, so now John is going to start reading. I have to continue reading because of the dynamics of the game. Okay, so I'm first on this one. Ooh. Nomenclature. Shit. I should have passed that one. I didn't even think of it.
Ramsey.
Wait, say that again?
Ramsey.
Ramsey. I don't know.
Keckler.
Chef Testant.
That's the recapper from TWAP that actually coined the
that term for Top
that
Chef.
They yeah. then stole they used, and yeah. used on the show.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Okay, so you're first, John.
Okay. I'll pass this one.
I knew you were going to pass this one. Sterling.
Archer.
Wordplay.
Cooper.
Awkward.
Phrasing.
Wow. All right. John?
Okay. Pass.
Kentucky.
Raylan.
County.
Harlan?
Yep.
Nice.
I'm going to pass.
Lemon?
Oh, Shelbyville?
Peeing?
Lizzing.
Yeah. Wrong lemon.
All right, you're first.
I liked what you were doing, but...
Shake harder, boy.
I'll pass this one.
Voodoo.
Carvey?
Yeah, it's tough.
Place.
Bontem.
What did you say, John?
Place.
Voodoo place. Louisiana.
Robichaux.
Tuttle.
Oh. Oh.
Said place. You know it.
I can't think of them.
Yes, you can.
I don't know.
Twigs.
Carcosa.
Yeah. Couldn't think of them. All
right, John.
Caracas.
Lenny.
Carl.
Inferno.
Briscoe.
Yeah.
Oh.
I should have passed, but I thought I could take my shot on that one.
We would have got that in one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, go, John. You can pass. Or
I'll pass. Yeah.
Oh, you shouldn't have passed. Hawthorne.
Pierce.
Good one.
All right, our last one to our second score break.
Detour.
You...
Is it Roadblock?
Yep.
Okay, well, team marriage has kind of an advantage here. But guess three, hosts, 12.
We get the participation ribbon! All right.
But we are playing for Sarah, then.
Yeah. Putty.
David?
Contraception.
Sponge worthy.
Oh,
right, you're up again.
Should have passed.
Yep.
I'm going to pass.
Frel.
Frack.
Yeah. Whoops. Ding, ding. Can't stop the marriage train.
Ooh, okay. Milo.
I don't know what that is.
Milo.
Red? I was just hoping you knew what Milo was, because I don't.
O'Brien?
Bristow.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I get it now. I mean, I get what you're going, Nick. I obviously get it, because I had the answer on a card. Oh.
I don't know, alias, but...
Goo.
Rambaldi.
Oh.
No one ever calls him by his first name.
No, they don't.
I think they used it in like one episode.
Remember, you can pass.
Yeah, I'm going to pass.
I think this is one word. I always see it spelt as one word. I'm not going to use it because I might be cheating. Never nude. I think that's one word too. In the show, anyways.
CMK?
No.
Did you say
never nude?
Never nude, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I'm assuming that's like a, you know, used as one word in the show. Yeah.
Dual.
Dual? Like
D-U-A-L.
D-U-A-L, okay.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Cutoffs? Yeah.
That's what I thought it was going to be too.
Bum.
Bum?
Worlds.
Globes.
Occupation.
Oh, analrapist.
My first thought was, is bumfuck one word or two?
Yeah, okay.
Festive. I'll not cheat. Say festive.
Okay.
I also don't know what this is from.
It's not Festivus, though.
No.
Lemon.
Oh, okay. Now I know what it's from.
Festum. Leap day?
Rapper?
Ridiculous?
Winter.
Holiday.
Chrismica?
Tracy.
Ludachristmas.
Oh, next!
Oh, my God.
Oh, that was a hard one.
Pass.
Oh, shit.
I'm pretty sure this is one word. Roadrunner?
Yeah, that's one word.
Coyote?
Sound.
Beep, beep.
One word, what?
Beep.
What?
Beep.
Sound. How do you... Okay, never mind.
Sound.
That was embarrassing.
So what
It was Roadrunner and Sound.
Roadrunner and Sound.
Tara answered beep, and I buzzed her.
And I said sound again.
Oh.
I don't get it. Sorry.
Sound.
Meep.
A meep.
Beep. Come on. Come on.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to pass on this one.
Fan wank.
Retcon?
Yeah!
Oh, wow. Nice.
All right. All right. We're switching again?
God, I haven't thought that word in ages. Oh.
I was trying to think of a good example for it, but I know what the famous retcons are.
Okay. Guests have 5.
Yeah.
Team marriage has 18.
All right. Still anybody's game, guys.
We've got 5.
We're playing to 30.
You did say non-regulation.
Yeah, non-regulation. Just giggles, people.
It's just for fun.
Just for fun.
For Dave points.
For Dave points.
I'm going to pass, but...
Synthesizer?
Gene?
Nah, that's a good guess.
Signal?
I don't know.
Ross?
Helicopter?
I may be mixing up my things. I may have led everybody astray.
Gizmo?
Oh, Kitar?
Yeah.
Geller?
Yes?
I don't know.
Last clue.
Send.
Keyboard?
I don't know what a good clue for this is, honestly. Like,
robotic?
Is that vocoder?
It's transponster.
Oh, that has nothing to do with Ross. Same.
That wasn't from the Infinite Time episode,
wasn't it?
No, Chandler is the transponster.
Oh, yeah, well, that'll teach you. That'll teach you, Sarah. So is it back to me? Or is that who's was first?
Well, nobody
retcon,
got that one.
So you're first again, John.
I don't know what this is, so I'm going to pass.
Okay. You're going to pass?
Yeah.
Phone booth.
TARDIS? It's a Doctor Who thing.
Oh.
I don't watch it either.
Never would. Glad we didn't spend any time on that one. Greg.
Bunny?
Island.
Coconut phone?
Yes.
Oh, fuck. Fuck! I had the clue. I just remembered the clue I should have given.
Partner.
I got this, guys.
I don't know.
Initiative.
Initiative?
Greg Island Initiative. Although I understand why you might be confused.
Oh, shit.
Wife.
These
clues have a split personality. Sawyer.
Kate.
All right. Last clue.
Initiative.
Oh, God.
Dharma?
Yeah.
Yes. Ah, good. Got the poster on.
Pass. Yeah. Set me up. Set me up, John.
Justin.
Doesn't count that way. Just gotta say it.
Kelly?
You jerk, John. You gave the perfect non-clue.
I tried to trap you.
Justin. Yeah. Network. Probably not gonna help you.
Canada.
I don't know.
Britain.
Justin. Network Britain.
I feel like the best I can do is play defense here.
Go ahead.
At least throw off Tara.
But we're going to need
arrest.
Oh. I can't remember.
Nickname. Think it out. What are the delicious clues I've given you?
Britain. Nickname. Network?
Yes, put them together.
Beeb?
Oh, Justin Beeb.
Nice. All right.
Oh, God. I'll pass.
Tribes?
Survivor?
Lopsided.
Merge?
Pagonging?
Yes! Could have played for 2 years. I would not have gotten that one.
All right, John. This is number 30 of 32.
I'll pass.
No.
Buddy.
Press.
Creature.
Whammies.
Oh, that.
The penultimate secret code word.
I don't know this term either, so I'll pass. But
Kevin?
I don't know.
Pennsylvania.
Scranton?
Band.
Scrantonicity.
Oh, yeah.
Lastly?
Don't know this one either.
Pass?
Yeah.
Boy, one word. I'm going to go with addicting. It's okay you don't get this one. This is going to be a multi-clue get.
Okay.
I'm just going to pass. I have no idea what this is.
Fry.
Slurm.
It is the soda from the Futurama universe. Slurm. Fry loves it. All right. Score break. That was our last question. Let's hear it. Everybody's on pins and needles. See who won.
The guests have 6.
Yep.
And Team Married has 24.
All right. For shits and giggles, here is our tiebreaker. John, would you like to go first?
I don't know it again.
You don't know
so
it?
So no.
All right. So I'm going to give clues to Nick and Tara, and whoever guesses first wins. Google.
No.
Fake.
Chum Hum.
Chum Hum is correct. That is the fake Google from The Good, Good Wife.
No show I don't watch.
So much TV.
Tara. Tara.
All right, everybody, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We investigated the new Veronica Mars movie and then went around the dial with stops at Review, Walking Dead, Burning Love, and Orphan Black. Nick and John successfully submitted Buffy's amends to the No-Nack. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Team Marriage was the winner of this week's Secret Code Word Game Time No Points Awarded. Remember...
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, on behalf of the absent Sarah D. Bunting and Tara Ariano.
Marshmallow.
John Ramos.
Want to try my belt flask?
And Nick Reinwell Jones.
Stop it, stop it!
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here, hopefully with Sarah, on Extra Hot Great.
I'm the reason people know that Anne Hathaway has a vagina. I mean, before that, you know, they thought, yeah, maybe, but they didn't know.